want to be sure that people who don't want to listen get a chance to leave. Okay, hi everybody. We're going weiter in the Chumash, and as we know, Bamidbar involves a lot of counting, a lot of dividing of populations, and there is an interesting distinction that in Bamidbar we first see the distinction between Shevet Levi and Kohanim. All Kohanim are Levim, of course, they are descended from Kahas, right? We know that Levi has three sons, Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. Kahas has four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. Amram has three children, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Kahas has a few children, but one of them is Korach. Yitzhar has a few children, one of them is Korach. So Korach is from Yitzhar, and Moshe is from Amram. Yitzhar and Amram are brothers, so Korach and Moshe are first cousins. We're going to see that later on. So it turns out, therefore, that both Kohanim and regular Levim both come from Amram, meaning other Levim come from other sons as well. But it's interesting that this is the only case where you can have a brother that's a Levi and another brother is a Kohen. Moshe is a Levi, Aaron is a Kohen. But Kohanim and Levim have different responsibilities. But not only do they have different responsibilities, but they have different mandatory retirement ages. The Torah says a Levi works in the Mishkan from age 30 to age 50. There's only 20 years in which Levim work. And then at age 50, there is mandatory retirement. So the Mishnah in Chulin has a very interesting point. The Mishnah in Chulin doesn't explain, but it simply makes the following observation. That which makes a Kohen pasul does not make a Levi pasul. And that which makes a Levi pasul does not make a Kohen pasul. What makes a Kohen pasul? Mum. If a Kohen has a physical blemish, a Kohen cannot do the service till he gets better. And if it's a permanent disability, he may never be able to do it. In fact, mum could be fairly extensive. Even wearing glasses might be a mum if your natural eyesight is not good enough to see. So if a Kohen has a mum, he's pasul. If a Levi has a mum, he's kosher. But old age, 50 and above, not that old, certainly as I get older that becomes less old, 50 and above is pasul for a Levi and is not pasul for a Kohen. So for a Kohen it's the mum and not the years. For a Levi it's the years and not the mum. Okay, we see that from the Pesukim itself, but what is the logical explanation? Why should it be that years are a disqualification for a Levi and not a Kohen, but mum is a disqualification for a Kohen and not a Levi? So there's an explanation that is said in the name of the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek was the third Chabad Rebbe, but again, he was considered to be not only Chabad, he was considered to be, in the time of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, one of the Gedolei HaPoskim. I mean, and all of the Gedolim considered him to be one of them. So he's very, very authoritative. In fact, it's very interesting that the Orech HaShulchan, who was not a chassid at all, the Orech HaShulchan was one of the great, great poskim of the late 19th century. The Orech HaShulchan actually got his smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. How did he get smicha from the Lubavitch Rebbe? First of all, the Lubavitch Rebbe didn't give smicha normally, because the Orech HaShulchan's first position in Lithuania was the head of a city that was mainly Chabad. And he was not Chabad, so they naturally didn't necessarily trust him. So they said they would only take him as Rav if he would get smicha from the Rebbe. So he spent 3 weeks, or maybe a month, with the Tzemach Tzedek full time, and the Tzemach Tzedek gave him smicha, and then he was qualified to become a Rav in the Chabad city. So he mentions that although the Tzemach Tzedek was a tremendous mekubel and a tremendous in Chassidus, he wrote perhaps 30,000 pages in Kabbalah and Chassidus besides his Chidushim on Shas and Shulchan Aruch. But the Orech HaShulchan said that the Tzemach, he said this as a compliment, he said, the Tzemach Tzedek didn't tell him a single word of Kabbalah, because he knew that it wasn't the Aruch HaShulchan's thing, and therefore he did not impose any Chassidus or Kabbalah on him. They only spoke in Shas and Poskim and the like. So he considered that to be a great compliment, that the Tzemach Tzedek didn't, for, even though he had him kind of captive for a month, he didn't force any Chassidus on him. Okay. But be it as it may, the Tzemach Tzedek says the following explanation. The Avodah of a Kohen and a Levi represents two different ways of serving God. The Kohen represents the person who follows rules. If any of you have ever learned the Mishnayos of Kachim, or Gemara even, and certainly even the Chumash, you will know that Korbanos is a certain area where there's very little room for improvisation or creativity. You have to follow the Seder exactly. You have to do exactly the way the rules go. It has to be done the same way every single day. You don't bring your own twist or your own creativity to it. So the Mila of a Kohen represents consistency, doing it every day, whether the weather is good or the weather is bad. You know, a Kohen is not allowed to wear an overcoat because he's not allowed to wear extra garments. He can't wear gloves. He can't wear socks or shoes, no matter what the weather is, etc. So the Kohen represents the person who follows the rules of the Torah with no deviation, no change, over and over and over again. Now, the Levi's Avodah is very different. The Levi is a musician. The Levi, some Levi'im were singers, and some Levi'im were instrumentalists. Right? In the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, we had both. In fact, this was actually the argument of the early Reform movement. Listen to this. You know, one of the first things the Reform movement did in the early 19th century is they introduced an organ in synagogue Friday night service. Other than that, they were from, again, the Reform movement began kind of gradually, meaning the initial, in fact, just to tell you the difference, there was a Reform synagogue in Krakow. What was the Reform synagogue in Krakow? The Rav gave the drasha in Polish instead of Yiddish. that was called the, even to this very day, by the way, the synagogue is still there. That was the Reform synagogue in Krakow. Everything else was exactly the same. So what Reform meant in different countries at different times was very different. In some places, Itaka meant, you know, treif and chilul Shabbos and non-believing in Torah. In some places, it simply meant that Russia was in Polish instead of Yiddish or German, and that was enough to make it totally treif. A religious person wouldn't walk into that type of temple. But the first Reformed temples were not so radical, but one of the radical changes they made, they still had a mechitza, and people wore yarmulkes, and they davened in Hebrew, but they put in an organ. And they had a lumdus, they had a chaf, they had a lumdusha reason why they put in an organ, because they said, well, listen, playing a musical instrument on Shabbos, even with a Jewish musician, is only a rabbinic law. Right? The Chachamim prohibited playing musical instruments lest you fix it. And because of this, in the Beis HaMikdash, these rabbinic laws didn't apply, and the Levi'im would play their instruments in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. And we know that Chazal call every synagogue a Beis Mikdash Ma'at, a miniature Beit HaMikdash. So they made the halachic argument. See, initially they would argue halacha, later they abandoned it, but initially they were trying to work within orthodoxy, and they made the argument that the same way the rabbinic prohibition of musical instruments doesn't apply in the temple, it wouldn't apply in the miniature temple. And in fact, that is why the Reform movement called their synagogues temples, to emphasize the Beis Mikdash Ma'at idea. And initially there were tshuvas, the Chassam Sofer, people had to deal with this halachically. Chassam Sofer said it was usher, etc., and the like. But be it as it may, Levi'im are musicians. And unlike the Kohen, who has to follow the rules exactly with no deviation, no movement, no change, when it comes to the Levi'im, there was room for improvisation, for emotion, for feeling. Right? The Torah doesn't mandate how they have to sing their songs. The Torah doesn't even mandate what the songs are. It happens to be that different Tehillim were chosen for each of the days, but on a Doraisa level, I mean, the Tehillim are not in the Torah, Doraisa level, it could even be a song of your own words. Although I'm not sure if we ever had, historically, that type of situation. So, in a sense, therefore, we would say that the Mila of the Kohen is the consistency of action and the exactitude of detail. The Maila of the Levi were the spontaneity of emotion and creativity and artistry and individuality. These are two different poles. In fact, one might even say it may be similar to the Chassid and the Misnaged, right? The Misnaged, at least in terms of stereotype, kind of looks at the book, looks at the details, and follows the rules 100%. And the Chassid, again, this is a stereotype, believes more in the panemius and the internal spirit of Dveikus, of Kavana, of love of God, of fear of God, of being suffused with emotion. So if we accept the idea that the Kohen represents Avodas Hashem based on the details of Halacha, never changing, never deviating, and the Levi represents Avodas Hashem based on the powerful emotions that go through a person, kind of the subjectivity of religious experience, we could actually explain halachically how this is reflected in what is pasul in the other. He says, a Kohen, the longer he does the ritual, right, the longer you stick with something, then the more familiar you are. If anything, there's no reason to disqualify a Kohen by years. Because if he did it for 20 years, he's better than somebody who did it for 10 years. So it's 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. Let him keep on going. Because consistency only gets stronger as you keep on going. So the only thing that can stop the Kohen is physical disability. He can keep the job until it becomes physically impossible. Now, granted, I mask him that not every mum is a physical impossibility. There are mumim that are very small, but as a general category, mum represents the physical limitations of a body. So a Kohen doesn't get disqualified with years, because if anything, years make him better at his job. Because his job is to be consistent, his job is to be exact, and the longer he does it, then the more habituated he's going to be. So the ikuv, the thing that stops a Kohen, is when the body no longer goes out. He can no longer when the body does go out, and he can no longer do the job. With the Levi, it's the opposite. When a person is seized with ecstasy, in a sense, the limitations of the body cease to exist. You go beyond your body. We see, for example, in the opposite way, when a car falls on a kid or whatever it is, you sometimes hear stories about a mother being able to lift the car. I'm sure you've heard these stories, where somehow in the adrenaline, out of the extreme emotion that she has for her child, she can lift the car to save the child. And then she may be in the hospital for 6 months. But the idea is that extreme emotion can enable us to transcend the limits of the body. You know, Lahabdil, even in these Christian faith healing things, they sometimes have these TV shows or whatever, where the guy calls out, rise, and this and that, and people get up from their wheelchairs. And all right, so a lot of it is 100% fake. A lot of it is absolutely fraudulent. That's very true. But doctors will tell you, there is a certain placebo effect of mind over matter. It's an amazing thing that when I feel something strongly enough, it literally can control my mind, can control my body. Now, it's not going to make me better permanently, but at least for a few seconds. Something like that can actually happen. Because when emotions are so powerful, the physical limitations of the body cease to exist. So the Levi does not get disqualified by physical disability. Because since his avoda is an avoda of the emotions and the heart, that is so powerful that it goes beyond it. So, if physical disability is the enemy of the Kohen and not the Levi, what is the enemy of the Levi? Habituation, doing it too long. Because emotions get stale with repetitive action. The Kohen gets better in his job the longer it goes, because his job is to follow the rules. The Levi, however, could get burnt out, because the idea of emotion requires renewal. And sometimes when we're habituated and it becomes stale, we no longer have the feelings. So that is why the enemy of the Levi is age and not the body condition. The enemy of the Kohen is the condition of the body and not age. The Kohen gets better with age. The Levi might get worse, because the Levi may lose some of his cheshek, some of his passion, some of his individuality, some of the hislavos, the enthusiasm of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. Right, so that is a difference that Tzemach Tzedek said between the Kohen and the Levi. But then he goes on and brings that in fact it says each of us build a Mishkan in our heart. Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. In my heart I build a Mishkan, a dwelling place for Hashem. And in our Mishkan we need Kohanim and Levim. That means within our own personalities we have to have Kohanim and Levim. We have to have the aspect of Kohanim, which follow the rules, follow the halacha, because, you know, as you know, there's always a conflict. Sometimes people think that spirituality may contradict halacha, because people want to focus on emotions, they want to focus on feelings, and a person might feel erroneously that the details of halacha take a person away from those feelings. Let's say Zaman Kriya Shema is... What time is it? 8:10? What time is it? Say Zman Sof Zman Kriya Shema. And back of me. Okay, whatever it is. If it's around 8:10. So let's say a person's real tired. And a person says, you know, if I sleep until 9, I'm going to have such a wonderful Shema. I'll be Makabel Ol Malchus Shemaya. Is it worthwhile for me to say Shema before, you know, 8:10? When I can have so much more Kavana at 9 o'clock? Or does God really care if I say Shema at 8:10 or 8:12? What difference does that make? Or somebody once, I remember, gave a share years ago in the laws of Tisha B'Av that you're only allowed to wash your hands until the knuckle. So a woman who was not religious said, are you telling me that the infinite God has nothing more to worry about than whether the water goes up to the knuckle or past the knuckle? Of course, the short answer is that if you're an infinite God, you can worry about everything because you don't have any particular... there's no particular limitation on what you can worry about. But okay. But the point based... So you'll often find that people who are into what you might call spirituality have a certain impatience with halachic rules. They think halachic rules are stifling. They think they're superficial. They think they're too obsessive-compulsive. And they want to focus on the big picture of loving God and fearing God and thinking about spirituality. Right? So therefore, every Levi needs to be counterbalanced with a Kohen. And that's in our own personalities. The Kohen understands every detail counts. The Kohen understands you have to follow Hashem's rules. If you don't follow Hashem's rules, nothing is going to work. You can't talk about loving God and fearing God unless you follow what God says. And then you're saying, I ignore all of God's directions and I'm going to do my own thing about loving God and fearing God. Right? So the Levi needs to be counterbalanced with a Kohen within our own personality. In our own Mishkan, we need the Levi and the Kohen. On the other hand, if you're too much Kohen, then you have another problem. And that is, you sometimes can act without feeling. You act mechanically. You go through the motions. You don't have passion. You don't have feeling. You don't have emotion. And therefore the Kohen needs the Levi that represents the service of God with the heart. And therefore in our Mishkan, right, the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash is a representative and a symbol of the Mishkan we build in our lives. And just as the Mishkan needed Kohanim and Levim, the Mishkan that we build in our own heart and soul needs the Kohen who follows the rules and needs the Levi who brings the emotion and the feeling to those rules. You know, yeah?
So basically you need to be a misnagged and a chosid in one.
Say again, I didn't hear you.
You need to be a misnagged and a chosid in one person.
That's exactly right. That is exactly the message. The Levi is kind of what you might call the chosid, and the Kohen is the misnagged. Again, I'm using these terms in very general ways, and you have to be both. So the question is, who's right? The answer is, you have to be both. Now, the thing is, this was actually, you know, when the Hasidic movement started in the 1700s, the Baal Shem Tov and then the Maggid of Mezerich, so you know that there were many, many Gedolim that were against the Hasidic movement, the early Hasidic movement, and among them was none other than the Vilna Gaon himself. Right? The Vilna Gaon himself put the early Hasidic movement, which was only a small group, he put them into cherem, he put them into excommunication. He considered the early Hasidic movements to be, at least some segments of it, to be very, very dangerous. And the Vilna Gaon was quite bitter. Now his own disciple, Chaim Volozhin, just 50 years later, was also against the Hasidic movement, but it was a totally different way. It was very, very gentle and non-confrontational. But the Vilna Gaon was ready to fight, and the Vilna Gaon very rarely got involved in any issues outside of Talmud Torah and the like. And what was the, in fact, the Hasidic movement, as it were, they sent a great rabbi to talk to the Vilna Gaon. That great rabbi was none other than the Baal HaTanya, the Alter Rebbe. And their choice of the Alter Rebbe was an extremely wise decision, because the Alter Rebbe, of all the early Hasidic Rebbes, was the greatest Talmud Chacham in Nigla, in Shas and Poskim. So if the Vilna Gaon were to like anybody, this would be the one that he would like. In fact, that's what they say. Chabad, originally, Lubavitch Hasidus, is the only Hasidus that started in Lithuania. And as a result, Chabad, in its inception, I'm not saying today, today is a little different, but in its inception, Chabad was by far the most learned of Hasidus, in terms of Shas and Poskim and the like, because it was Litvisha. Litvisha Hasidim weren't that emotional. We have this expression in Yiddish, a kalto Litvak, a cold Lithuanian. It's an expression, you know, as opposed to the warm, emotional Polish or Hungarian personality. The Litvak is said to be kind of cold and dispassionate, and they loved reason and the mind and learning. So as a result, the only Hasidus that started in Lithuania, Chabad, was a very intellectual Hasidus. That's why it's called Chabad. Chachma Bina Das. Intellectual Hasidus. Right? So the Alter Rebbe was sent, and the Vilna Gaon refused to see the Alter Rebbe. Because, again, you could speculate, but it may very well be that although the Vilna Gaon might have seen the Alter Rebbe, but that would have given an imprimatur to all aspects of Hasidus. And that the Grover was not going to do. So what was the problem of Hasidus? Why didn't the Vilna Gaon like Hasidus? What was against it? So some things are very, very technical Kabbalistic arguments. There are some Kabbalistic arguments about Tzimtzum, about divine concealment, you know, in which for us don't seem to be that huge, but they actually were very, very huge. But the simplest idea was that in the early Hasidic movement, the things that were emphasized were emotions and feelings in Avodas Hashem, panemius, kavana. And those are important. Chazal talk about them. I mean, Hasidus didn't invent the idea that you have to serve God with your heart. I mean, the Torah says you shall love Hashem with all of your heart, all of your soul. But the Gra saw in some aspects of Hasidus, I'm going to use a fancy English word, what you might call an antinomian tendency. Now, an antinomian simply means against the details of law. In other words, there was within Hasidus a netiyah that it's not so important to keep the halachos exactly if your heart is in the right place. And the Gra saw that as potentially very, very dangerous, because that would undermine halachos. It would undermine the importance of Torah learning. Like, why should I break my head over a ketzos or over Rebbe Kiv Eger? I can just talk to God and pour out my heart in his bainanus or his bainanus or whatever it would be. So the Vilna Gaon needed, as it were, to emphasize the primacy of halacha. Now, interestingly enough, this is the main purpose of the Nefesh HaChaim. Why did Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the disciple, the greatest Talmud of the Gra, why did he write the Nefesh HaChaim? What is the Nefesh HaChaim about? I'm not sure many of you may have learned the Nefesh HaChaim. My guess is, however, even those of you that have learned some Nefesh HaChaim only learned Shar Dalet and didn't bother with Shar Aleph Beis Gimel. And Shar Dalet is a big, big essay about the greatness of Talmud Torah. You could almost call it the Bible of the yeshiva world, the greatness of Talmud Torah. But the Nefesh HaChaim is a book that has a thesis. It has a reason why it was written. And the reason it was written as an answer to the antinomianism of Hasidus. Because Hasidus stressed the panemius shebelev, which of course is important, of course it's important. But there was a fear that by stressing the panemius shebelev, you would denigrate the importance of the pratim, the details of doing mitzvahs exactly, and Talmud Torah. So the Nefesh HaChaim was written to establish the importance of the mitzvos and the learning, even if you don't always have the panemius halev. So essentially, what's interesting is, sometimes you have svarim that are actually talking to each other. This is a very interesting phenomenon. There are svarim that are in dialogue, meaning a sefer was written, and another sefer was written to kind of address that first sefer, even though they don't mention each other by name. But they're really talking to each other. Nefesh HaChaim was written to be a dialogue with the Tanya. Therefore, the truth of the matter is, take a Nefesh HaChaim, take a Tanya, learn them, and you'll actually see. Mamash, imagine you have Rav Chaim Volozhiner and Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi talking to each other over this table. That's exactly what is going on. The Svarim are in dialogue. The Tanya emphasizes the panemius of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, although he does talk about Maisa as well. And the Nefesh HaChaim says, well, all of that is true, but you have to have Maisa. Although he also talks about Kabbalah, meaning nobody negates what the other one says, but it's all a question of what you have to emphasize. And really, this is the meaning of Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. These and those are the word of the living God, meaning this is not a question of this is true and this is false. Both are emes. You have to be a Kohen and a Levi. But if you're talking about the importance of a Levi, I got to talk about the importance of a Kohen. And if I'm talking about the importance of a Kohen, you need to talk about the importance of a Levi, because we have to have a balance, we have to have a harmony. And that is why there are these movements in Am Yisrael. Because each has to bring out the important ideas, the important nekudos that a person needs to be an Eved Hashem. So in the Tanya, which talks about Panemius, there's tremendous discussion about the importance of Maisa. And as you know, Rav Shneur Zalman wrote a Shulchan Aruch, the Rav Shulchan Aruch HaRav, a halachic manual. And the halachic manual, although Chabad just calls it the Shulchan Aruch, which, you know, I would not call it the Shulchan Aruch. It should be called the Shulchan Aruch of the Rav, because you shouldn't. It doesn't replace Rav Yosef Karo. But the Rav Shulchan Aruch is a great posek. The Mishnah Berura quotes the Rav Shulchan Aruch many, 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 many times. It is absolutely a very authoritative source of halacha. So Rav Shneur Zalman certainly was very much a gadol in halacha, but he emphasizes the panemius of feelings. The Nefesh HaChaim emphasizes the importance of meisen.
As far as we're
learning,
the first book of the Tanya is at a Rebbe writes the importance of the Talmud Torah, but beyond, first you have to know
Tassel,
what the Tassel is.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then you have to learn Kabbalah and Hasidus and all this Kabbalistic stuff.
Yeah.
But it's actually not going to think of the Nefesh HaChaim. Everybody is at first Talmud Torah.
Yeah.
First Nigre and Shas.
Yeah.
And then Hasidus. So
the ultimately, what, yeah.
Is it the dialogue of the first book of Mikotay Amarim? Because Mikotay Amarim is more like, yeah, feelings and heart, yeah, and how to...
Well, remember, you know, I don't have the exact dates, but remember that the different chalakim of the Tanya came out at different times. They were not all printed in the same time, and as a result, there were certain chalakim that were circulating before other chalakim were circulating. And, like everything else, like every movement, there were individual followers that were picking and choosing parts of the Alter Rebbe's Torah that they liked. So they were taking that part, you know, the part about feelings and the like. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner gives an example of how feelings aren't enough. He gives an example. Let's say a person, it's time to make a Pesach Seder, and you're so tired that you decide to push off the Seder to the next day. Now, you might say, well, if the purpose is to experience Yetzias Mitzrayim and to love Hashem and to fear Hashem and to have Kavana, isn't it better for me to make a Seder Pesach morning when I'm rested and I can do it right, instead of doing it at night when I'm falling asleep? But that would be crazy, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you make the Seder at night, then doing it the next day with all of the Kavana that you have is not doing the Ratzon Hashem. Now, I once told this story, and again, in a non-religious group, not in our Sameach in the States, and a woman actually said, oh yeah, we did that. We couldn't get the family together for Pesach, so we made the Seder a week later. They made the Seder the week after Pesach. It was great. The family was together. We read the Haggadah. So art imitates, you know, life imitates art, so to speak, in which a person says, oh, we had a wonderful Pesach Seder. The only problem is it wasn't on Pesach. But that doesn't work. You can have all these wonderful kavanas, but you're not doing the Ratzon Hashem. If you're not doing the Ratzon Hashem, you're not going to be matzliach. Right? So this is the big challenge that we have as from Jews and as B'nai Torah. And that is, on one hand, a Ben Torah has to be very, very conscientious in halacha. If Zman Kriya Shema is 8:10, then all of your wonderful kavana at 8:15 is not really serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, I have great kavana. I'm not doing the Ratzon Hashem. I am trying to serve God by what I like to do and not what Hashem wants me to do. And that's not serving God, that's serving me. Right? Spirituality that makes me feel good is not the test of being an Eved Hashem. On the other hand, sometimes we do have a tendency that you might say that we don't see the forest because of the trees. We're fixated and focused on detail this, detail this, detail this. But we don't step back and see the big picture of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, speaking to Hashem in our own words, turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, the idea that the Rambam writes that originally tefillah was every person davened in their own words. Later, we became unable to formulate our prayer, so the Anshei Knesset HaGdola gave us a Nusach Kavua. But the Svarim tell us that even when prayer became fixed and definite, a person should still develop the capacity to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their own words. That one should feel, because it's true, it's not just an imagination, one should feel that they have a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one should talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One can complain, one can express gratitude, one can ask for help. And one should feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always listening, always cares, always loves. So let's say the minhag of Breslov, called the Spiderdus, where you go by yourself and you talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is a very, very good minhag. Now, I wouldn't say take off morning seder and do it. You have to find the right times. But they say the Chafetz Chaim did this all the time. People who were with the Chafetz Chaim on his trips, people who were next to, you know, the hotel, the room in the motel, in the inn next to him, they would say he was always talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yiddish, in the language of a child, you know, talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. And that's something that we need to cultivate, that idea of feeling connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why I see, I don't know, the Svarim, the Bulvavi series, I mentioned the phrase, Bulvavi Mishkan Ebna, so there's a Mechaber, he was anonymous for a few years, now we know who he is, Rabbi Summer Schwartz, who is, must be quite a phenomenon, because Baruch Hashem, he's able to write so many Svarim about Avodas Hashem, but he has volumes and volumes and volumes. On number one, knowing yourself, knowing your personality, knowing your milas, knowing your chesreinus. And number two, how to feel a personal relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he tapped into something, because many, many B'nai Torah, many, many people feel that void in their lives. You know, we do mitzvahs, we do learn, we try to do everything right, but we don't necessarily have a feeling of what we're supposed to be connecting to. That's kind of the next step. Now, there are people in the world who try to be spiritual without doing mitzvahs, and we believe that that's going to be a fake, that's going to be a dead end. We have to do the mitzvahs, we have to know the halacha. But still, we have to know that ultimately there is a goal to all of this, and the goal is to connect to the Almighty. And that's where the Levi comes in, and that is why the Avaida of the Kohen and the Avaida of the Levi are so important. That is actually why, in the yeshiva world in recent years, there has been such a resurgence of interest in Chassidus. And I wouldn't say, you know, I would call it Chassidus light, I wouldn't necessarily call it a heavy a Chassidus. But you'll find Sfarim like the Nesiva Shalom, I think Yisrael Wax gives a Chabur in Nesiva Shalom. Sfas Emes, a little bit more advanced, Rav Tzadok, maybe more advanced than that, are very popular in the yeshiva world. Now, maybe they're popular in terms of lip service. More people more people mention it as a good thing to learn than actually learn it. That may be so. But the idea is that there is a hakara, that sometimes there's a certain emptiness that we want to fill. And that's a very legitimate goal, because there is the avodah of the Kohen, which is consistency and discipline, and there's the avodah of the Levi, that is emotion and passion and feeling, and the Yid has to have both of those. By the way, it's very interesting historically that I think I may have mentioned this, that we can actually credit Kemat one person for bringing Chassidus, two people, for bringing Chassidus into the Litvashi yeshivas. Because Litvashi yeshivas were, you know, Chassidus was always outside of the Litvashi Torah world. But there are basically two people that we can credit, one in Eretz Yisrael and one in Chutz Laretz. The Eretz Yisrael was Rav Dessler. People don't realize Rav Dessler was a very, very great pioneer. Rav Dessler came out of Musar. Rav Dessler came out of Kelim. He was a Baal Musar. But the old Baalei Musar did not use Hasidish Sfarim at all. But when Rav Dessler became both first in England, and then he became Mashgiach of Panovich, he brought in Tanya, he brought in Sifrei Hasidus, because he thought that that would be a way to awaken the feelings and the hergeshim of people in Avas Hashem. And some of the older Baalei Musar, like Rav Eliyahu Lapyan, who had learned with Rav Dessler in Kelm, they didn't like it. They thought it was like bringing in something mibachutz that was not part of the Masorah in Europe. But Rav Dessler brought it in, and Baruch Hashem, it's been Masliach to some degree. And in the United States, the person who brought it in was Rav Kuttner. Rav Yitzhak Kuttner brought Sfas Emes, Rav Tzadok, Maharal, pre-Hasidus, but he brought all of those Svarim in. So really, you have two people. There are really two people, Mamish, impacted on the types of Svarim that are considered to be proper aids in Aveda, Bizman Hazar. But anyway, but this is a fascinating thought, I think, about why the halacha that a Kohen is disqualified in years, in blemishes and not in years, and a Levi is disqualified in years and not in blemishes, reflects the two different oifanim of Avodas Hashem, and the fact that in our own personality, we have to embrace both styles of Avodas Hashem. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us to do something.